8. On Thursday, he spent the morning at Lanfram & Associates examining the mock-ups, prototypes, and just plain fakes that the engineers had put together, the artists and draftsmen and poly-something experts, and electronics geniuses and clear-cut madmen, the crowd that Jack Lanferman paid, and in a way which always struck Lars as eccentric. Jack Lanferman never scrutinized the work done for him in exchange. He seemed to believe that if properly rewarded, every human being of talent did his best, with no goad, no thrusts or kicks or fires, no inter-office memos, nothing. And oddly, it appeared true, because Jack Lanferman did not have to spend his time in his office. He lived almost constantly in one of his sybaritic pleasure palaces, coming down to Earth only when it was time to view some finished product before its public release. In this case, what had originated as Sketch 278 had now passed through all its confirmation stages and had been test-fired. It was, among and in company with admittedly bizarre compeers, unique. On his own part, Lars Powderdry had never known whether to laugh or weep openly when he contemplated Item 278, now termed more ominously, to please the persaps who would look upon it by this title only, the Psychic Conservation Beam. Seated in the small theater somewhere under Central California with Pete Fried on one side of him, Jack Lanferman on the other, Lars watched the Ampex videotape of the Psychic Conservation Beam in action. Since it was an anti-personnel weapon, it could not be used on some obsolete hulking old battleship of a spacecraft floated out from orbit to be blown to bits at a distance of 11 million miles. The target had to be human beings, along with everyone else. Lars disliked this part. The psychic conservation beam was being demonstrated as it sucked dry the mentalities of a gang of worthless-looking thugs who had been detected trying to seize control of a small, isolated, in other words, pathetically helpless, colony of West Blocks on Ganymede. On the screen, the bad fellas froze, anticipating the Terweb, the instrument of terror. Rewarding, Lars thought. As a drama, it was satisfying, because the bad fellas, up to this moment, had run riot through the colony, like grotesques painted into existence as old-time movie ads to be pasted up at the entrances of local neighborhood theaters. The bad fellas had torn the clothing from young girls, beaten old men into indistinct blobs, had set fire, drunken soldier-wise, to venerable buildings, had done, Lars decided, everything except burn the library at Alexandria with its 16,000 priceless irreplaceable scrolls, including 4 lost-forever tragedies of Sophocles. Jack, he said to Lanferman, couldn't you have said it in ancient Hellenistic Palestine? You know how sentimental the persaps are about that period.
I know, Lanferman agreed. That's when Socrates was put to death.
Not quite, Lars said, but that's the general idea. Couldn't you have your androids shown as they laser down Socrates? What a powerful scene that would make. Of course, you'd have to supply subtitles or dub in an English voice track so the persaps could hear Socrates' pleas. Pete murmured, absorbed in watching the videotape. He didn't plead, he was a stoic. Okay, Lars said, but at least he could look worried. Now the FBI, using Item 278 for the first time in history, as the film took pains to inform its audience via the calm commentary by none other than Lucky Bagman himself, swooped. The bad fellas blanched, groped for their antiquated laser pistols or whatever it was they had, perhaps Frontier Model Colt 44s, Lars thought acidly. Anyway, it was all over for them, and the results would have moved, or in this case, melted, a stone. It was worse than the fall of the House of Atreus, Lars decided. Blindness, incest, daughters and sisters torn apart by wild beasts. What reality, in the final analysis, was the worst fate that could befall a group of humans? Slow starvation, as in the Nazi concentration camps, accompanied by beatings, impossibly hard work, arbitrary indignities, and at last the shower baths, which were actually Zyklon B hydrogen cyanide gas chambers. Yet item 278 nonetheless added to mankind's fund of techniques, tools to injure and degrade. Aristotle, on all fours, ridden like a donkey with a bit between his teeth. Such the Persaps wanted. Such was evidently their pleasure. Or was this all a hideous, fundamentally wrong guess? Westblock, its ruling elite, believed that the people were comforted by this sort of videotape, shown incredibly at the dinner hour, or displayed in still form via color pick in the breakfast time pape to be ingested along with the eggs and toast. The Persaps liked displays of power because they felt powerless themselves. It heartened them to see item 278 make mincemeat out of a gang of thugs who were beyond the pale. Item 278 from FBI high muzzle velocity guns sped out in the form of thermotropic darts which found their targets. And Lars looked away. "Androids," Peter reminded him laconically. Lars said between his teeth, "They look human to me." The film, horrid to Lars, clanked on. Now the bad fellas, like husks, like dehydrated skins, deflated bladders, wandered about. They neither saw nor heard. Instead of a satellite or a building or a city being blown up, a group of human brains, candle-like, had been blown out. "I want out," Lars said. Jack Lanferman looked sympathetic.
"Frankly, I don't know why you came in here at all. Go out and get a Coke."
"He has to watch," Pete Fried said. "He's taking responsibility."
"All right."
Jack nodded reasonably, hunching forward and tapping Lars on the knee to gain his shattered attention.
"Look, my friend, it isn't as if 278 will ever be used. It isn't as if..."
"It is as if," Lars said. "It's goddamn completely as if you could make it."
"I have an idea. Run the tape backward."
Jack and Pete glanced at each other, then at him, expectantly. After all, you never knew. Even a sick man might have a good idea now and then. A man made temporarily ill.
"First, you show these people like they are now," Lars said. "As mindless, de-brained, reduced to reflex machines, with maybe the upper ganglia of the spinal column intact, nothing more. That's how they start out. Then the FBI ships spurt the essential quality of humanness back into them. Got it? Have I found a winner?"
Jack giggled.
"Funny. You'd have to call it a psychic bestower gun, but it wouldn't work."
"Why not?" Lars said. "If I were a Persap, I know it would comfort me to see human qualities imparted to de-brained wrecks. Wouldn't it comfort you?"
"But see, my friend," Jack pointed out patiently, "what would emerge as a result of the item's action would be a gang of hoodlums."
True, he had forgotten about that. However, Pete spoke up at this point, and on his side.
"But they wouldn't be hoodlums if the tape was run backward, because they'd set museums on fire, undetonate hospitals, reclothe the nubile bodies of naked young girls, restore the punched-in faces of old men, and just generally bring the dead to life in a sort of offhand manner."
Jack said,
"It would spoil the Persaps' dinners to watch it."
He spoke with finality, with authority.
"What makes Persaps tick?" Lars asked him.
Jack Lanferman would know. It was Jack's job to know that. He lived by means of that knowledge. Without hesitation, Jack said,
"Love."
"Then why this?"
Lars gestured at the screen. Now the FBI was carting off the hulks who had been men, rounding them up like so many stunned steers.
"The Persap," Jack said thoughtfully, in a tone that told Lars that this was no light answer, no frivolity, is afraid in the back of his mind that weapons like this exist. If we didn't show them, the Persap would believe in their existence anyhow, and he'd be afraid that somehow, for reasons obscure to him, they might be used on him. Maybe he didn't pay his jet hopper license fee on time, or maybe he cheated on his income tax, or maybe he knows deep down inside him that he's not the way God built him originally, that in some way he doesn't quite fathom, he's corrupt.
Deserves item 278 turned his way, Pete said, nodding.
But he's wrong, Lars said futilely. He doesn't deserve anything at all, remotely like 278 or 240 or 210, any of them. He doesn't, and they don't.
He gestured at the screen.
But 278 exists, Jack said. The Persap knows it, and when he sees it used on an uglier life form than him, he thinks, hey, maybe they passed me by. Maybe because those fellows are so really bad, those Peep East bastards, 278 isn't going to get pointed at me. And I can go to my grave later on, not this year, but say 50 years from now. Which means, and this is the crux, Lars, he doesn't have to worry about his own death right now. He can pretend he will never die.
After a pause, Pete said somberly, the only event that really makes him secure, makes him really believe he's going to survive, is to see another person get it in his place. Someone else, Lars, had died for him. Lars said nothing. What was there to say? It sounded right. Both Pete and Jack agreed, and they were professionals. They went about their jobs intentionally, rationally, where he, as Marin had pointed out, was an idiot savant. He had a talent, but nothing, absolutely nothing, did he know. If Pete and Jack said this, then all he could do was nod.
The only mistake ever made in this area, Jack said presently, in the field of Terweps, was the mid-20th century insanity, of the universal weapon, the bomb that blew everyone up. That was a real mistake. That went too far. That had to be reversed. So we got tactical weapons, specialized more and more, especially in the Terwep class, so that not only could they pick out their target, but they could get at you emotionally. I go for Terweps. I understand the idea. But localization, that's the essence.
He put on, for effect, his clumsy ethnic accent.
You don't got no target, Mr. Larser, when you got Zapgun, which blow up whole world, even though it make lot of plenty fine terror. You got...
He grinned, wise peasantishly.
You got hammer, with which you hit yourself over your own head.
The accent and the attempted humor were gone, as he said,
the H-bomb was a monstrous paranoid logic error, the product of a paranoid nut.
There are not nuts like that alive today, Pete said quietly. Jack said instantly,
that we know of.
The three of them glanced at one another. Across the continent, Surly G. Febs said,
a one-way express first-class window seat ticket on a 66G no-blow-by rocket to Festung, Washington, D.C., and snap it up, miss.
He carefully laid out a 90 postcred note on the brass surface before the TWA clerk's window.